Welcome everybody to the Brian Piergrossi podcast. So great to be with you. So great to be with a very, very special guest today, Giovanni Piergrossi, my son. He's been a guest before. I think two times before, Gio, two or three.
Was it? I think it's only two, because I think there was one time it was like right after high school, and we went over like the four, forget exactly what it was. We went over like four
The four
rules of
keys,
life.
the four keys to happiness and well-being.
Yeah, I think it was like something like that, or like four rules, for life, or for success, or something like that. But then I think we did one. It was either like sophomore year. I think it was like sophomore year, the summer of sophomore year of college. And that was like the more recent one. We talked about like younger men and stuff like that, masculinity, stuff like that. So,
And now you graduated from college, from Penn State
yep.
University, degree in psychology. Congratulations on that. And now we're going to check in and look at the state of the world now and things that are alive for people, things that people are being challenged by, areas of adversity, areas of confusion, how to reach deeper levels of clarity, deeper levels of empowerment, deeper levels of living on purpose, deeper levels of inspiration. Deeper levels of strength, resiliency, deeper levels of inner peace, freedom, love. And it's exciting, huh? Exciting to drop in together. Thanks everybody for being a part of it. Now, you wanted to ask me something before we
I
as we
didn't
get
want to,
started?
it's not a complicated question, but I want to ask, how do you feel, having another son? Like, you're about to have another son coming on the way, and about to have a baby soon. So curious how you feel about that, how you feel about being, I guess, I mean, you're already a father, but I don't know the correct term, like double father. But
How do I feel about it? I feel good. I think like some people saw a video I made about how it wasn't something that I was thinking I wanted to do in my life. It seemed like it would be like kind of like a burden or something. It would be something that would like take up my time or take away my freedom. But I got away into got away by myself into the mountains. And had a space for deep spiritual contemplation, prayer, meditation. And I was really asking this question of how can I make the greatest difference in the world? How can I make the most positive difference in the world? How can I make the greatest positive impact in the world? This like felt like there was some kind of next chapter that was being called forth for me, which I thought maybe was something in the business realm or work realm. But what came through, what I heard was God told me to ask Annie if she wants to have a baby. So I was surprised by that. Not what I was expecting. So then I came back home and I told Annie that God told me to ask you if you want to have a baby. And she said yes. And now we're gonna have a baby. So it feels yeah, it feels special. It feels like, there's kind of what we was talking about in the beginning, like when you feel like you're doing what you're called to do, when you feel like you're called, when you're living on purpose, and you're living on purpose in a spiritual sense, and you're connected in that way. Yeah, it feels good. And then you just take it moment by moment, just being open to each moment and listening and being receptive.
Yeah. Well, I guess another question I have too is like specifically like raising a son. Obviously, there's like a lot of challenges, that young men face, especially in the modern day, like navigating like manhood, navigating like the concept of like masculinity. 'Cause now, a lot of people, especially like, 'cause I was in university, and like the whole concept they have there is like, gender is a social construct and all these different things, and like there's no such thing as masculinity, and like, there's this also this like kind of like what's the word? Like there's kind of like this feminization of like men in our modern day society. You know, like there's this concept of like, you know, like men don't need to have a specific role. You know, men and women are the same, and you know, they can do the same things in society and all these different things. And I'm not trying to like choose like what's wrong or right, but I'm just maybe a question you would be like, how do you think you'll like navigate your son like through all that? You know, like how do you feel like you'll be able to navigate and like be like a an influence on him to help him navigate like those obstacles in the world?
Yeah, I sensed that that was part of the reason, right? Part of the reason that I was called to bring a son into the world was for that very reason. So I definitely feel that that's the case. And the most important thing always is to lead by example, you know, because parents have like all these ideas of like, oh, I'm going to do this to him and do that to him, make him do this and force him to do that. And it's like, you can't make anybody do anything, and you can't force anybody to do anything. But with a child, with your son or your daughter, or with anybody in this world, if you are leading by example and you are showing a better way to live, that's bringing a deeper level of happiness and fulfillment, well-being, empowerment, love, freedom, inner peace, harmony, serenity, self-actualization, self-realization, then people will notice, and they may, you know, try other things. We have this thing where we don't want to like take the easy way sometimes, so they may want to try to figure it out on their own. But you're the example that's always there, that they can model. So I think that's the number one thing of all. Always is to be the change that you want to see in the world, especially when it comes to your children. And the second thing is to create a very open line of communication where anything can be talked about, anything can be discussed. So that's something I've always been proud of in our relationship, where I feel like we can talk about anything, we can discuss anything, even things that are more uncomfortable topics, things that are more vulnerable topics. We're able to talk about, I feel like, you know, that you can like talking about anything, and that I'm here for you, and there's unconditional love, and that creates a safe space to really learn, to grow, and to evolve. I mean, I think the conversations that you and I have had in the course of your life, I mean, we've probably talked for thousands of hours, you know, and the conversations that we've had, those conversations, like, they're not always politically correct. They're not always, you know, you get canceled for having a lot of those kind of conversations that we have privately. But what's important is to be able to have the freedom to ask questions. You know, that's the thing. And I think that's problematic right now in our culture and society, is people want to feel, they want everyone to feel good emotionally, to feel honored and respected and acknowledged, and everybody to feel good. And, you know, the emotional component is very important, which is a feminine quality, right? So the feminine is always kind of looking out for the emotions of, how's everybody feeling? How are you 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 feeling? You feel okay? You feel okay? You feel okay? Right? Everyone's feel okay. So there's a value to that. That's important. And the most important thing of all is to live from the truth. Because if you don't live from the truth, you're not going to feel good. That's just the reality of the matter. Like Jesus said, the truth will set you free. You know, so living from the truth is the greatest sense of freedom, the greatest sense of self-love and love in general, the greatest sense of empowerment, the greatest sense of inner peace. And so being able to live from the truth means being able to ask questions that could be uncomfortable, that could be scary, that could make you not feel good, that could be challenging. And so I think you and I we have a relationship where we're able to ask those kind of questions. You know, you can ask me those kind of questions, I can ask you those kind of questions. And that kind of relationship, it's really an intimate relationship. And the last thing I'll share on this is like with coaching, this is really key too, to be able to have the kind of trust with the coach-client relationship where you can ask co uncomfortable questions that could challenge somebody, and they're not going to get, you know, they might have emotions come up, but they're actually glad. That's what they want. They want to have that aspect of themselves that they've been hiding from, that they've been denying, that they've been repressing, that shadow element. They want it to be come into awareness, come into the light of awareness, and be integrated and become part of their superpower. So those two components, I think, are key with children, is being able to lead by example, and then being able to have an open line of communication where you can talk about, you know, the challenging, tough things. There's a safe space for that, a supportive space for that.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. And I think going back to what you originally said about like not forcing your kid to do something, but like basically showing them what will provide like what they should do to have the best, most optimum life. Because when you're raising your kid, you know, I think it's really important. And like obviously I'm not a father. I haven't raised kids. So like I'm not speaking from experience, but I'm just speaking from like what I've witnessed in the world and what I've seen from like parents and their relationships with their children. A lot of times there's parents where they always try to like force their kids or like, you know, you can't, don't do drugs or like, don't have, you know, sex, all these different things. Right. And I feel like when you kind of have this like forceful, like controlling relationship with your children, they kind of have this urge to like rebel because they don't. And it's like, it's more of like you're telling them what to do and what not to do instead of telling them like what's best. Because if you tell your children like, hey, you know, I don't think you should do drugs because it will, you know, ruin your relationships and it will lead you to being unproductive and it'll lead you to having a lot of problems in your life versus just like preventing them and holding them back, like it's a completely different thing because it's like you're giving them the knowledge that they need to like know what's right and wrong and you're educating them. And instead, they see that as like a loving and caring relationship, and like you want the best for them versus this like controlling relationship where you just want to have control and you want to tell them what not, you know, what to do and what not to do. Because children are very curious, right? And they want to find out, like, if you just tell them something, they don't have the knowledge of why that thing is bad. They just think, okay, this is bad, this is good, right? And it's completely different from telling them, like, okay, if you do XYZ, like that will actually lead to like a better life than doing these other things, right? And I think there's a lot of parents, they try to like force their kids to do different things instead of just letting them know and educating them on like, okay, this is what you do, and this is, you know, th this is what's going to lead to a good life, this is going to lead to a bad life, and you can make your own decisions, but you know, just understand that, you know, this is not going to lead to the most optimal life. Now, obviously, there's other things where you should be like strict with because, you know, the child can get hurt or they can, you know, it's something that's immediately dangerous to them or something that's immediately harmful, in which you should be strict. But it's not a sense of like being angry at them or you know, being mad at them, because that's one thing I realized too. Like, you know, some parents, they get angry or they get mad at their child. And I think it's not a sense of like, you know, you should get angry at the child because the child did nothing wrong. They just are learning, right? They're kind of like naive to what's wrong and what's right, and they're naive to like what's actually harmful to them, what actually will hurt them. But the thing is that you're strict in the sense that like you're guiding them in the right direction, and you understand that they're gonna make mistakes and they're gonna, you know, they're not going to do the right thing all the time because they don't know any better. But then you correct them and you guide them on the right path and you say, okay, well, this, you know, you didn't do this, you know, don't cross the street, you know, when there's a red light, Johnny, because you know you'll get hit by a car, like, you know. And you might have to pull them back a little bit, and say, you know, don't do that, you know, and be a little bit strict. But it's not a sense of like you're angry at him, you're not mad at him, you're just teaching him that lesson. and you're trying to correct them and guide them on the right path, right? So I think it's really like I think that's something that like a lot of people don't understand, like being like a parent is like you definitely have to like it's not a sense of like forcing your kid to do the right thing, because I don't think that ever works. I've never seen that work. I've always seen the opposite of where people are like in this super controlling household and then just rebel. And it's I think that the better thing is like you have like a loving and caring relationship, like you said, a deep intimate relationship, because like I do really value that with our relationship. And I think it's something that a lot of fathers and sons don't have, you know. I do have friends that have that type of relationship, but it's really rare. And when I actually see that relationship between fathers and sons, where they have that deep intimate relationship and like the father is really like a guiding force for the son, those are the people that I know that are like the most successful. Like one of my closest friends, his father has always like been in his life and been like a good example for him, and you know, taught him a lot of stuff when he was younger. And he's like highly successful. Like he has a really like his life is like, you know, he has a lot of success in his life. And I think our society doesn't really like value as much as it used to. It doesn't value like the importance of a father, like a father figure in people's lives. And there's so many people I know where they don't have a father figure. You know, they weren't raised with a father figure in their life, and it's done a lot of damage. Because the thing is no matter how much the world wants to create this concept that like men and women are the same, and we, you know, you can, you know, there's no such thing as gender and all this stuff, like men and women will always have different experiences. And that's just because like the differences that we have are so innate to us, and it's innate to a point where we don't even understand how innate it is, right? Because I think that's part of the problem with our modern society is like we have this kind of like it's like this God complex where we think that we understand everything about humanity, we understand everything about human psychology, we understand everything about, you know, social matters and gender and all this different stuff. And I don't think we truly do. I don't think we truly understand how the depths of humanity and the depths of what's innate to, you know, the way we act, the way we behave and all that, right? Because, you know, throughout like millions of years of evolution, our brains have been evolving to these different environments, and these differences have been programmed into us. And that was something I kind of had to learn the hard way, because when I started going out into the world and, you know, I started dating, I started experiencing these things as I got older, I started realizing, you know, and they use this phrase in the online community, but I was kind of red-pilled, you know. I was red-pilled with the truth of the fact that there were these differences between men and women, and it was these behavioral differences and these kind of dynamics that existed that basically really paved like these different paths for men and women, that they, you know, like for a man to be successful, for a man to navigate the world, he had to, you know, you have to deal with different things in the modern day. You have to deal with, you know, all these vices that exist that are different for women, because, you know, some women have issues with pornography, but it's not at all the same degree as the amount of men that have issues with pornography, right? Men have to navigate. You know, you have this strong sexual urge that couldn't become a problem if you don't control it. And then you have, you know, this urge, like there's a lot of men who are addicted to video games. So then you have this urge to like, you know, there's a lot of like things that men deal with that are innate to them that are different things that they have to navigate with through, you know. And then also there's, you know, in society too, like to attract the opposite sex, right? For women, it's a lot more of a different thing than for men, you know, because I think for women in general, a lot of men, they prioritize like beauty, they prioritize you know, a woman who's kind, nurturing, those different types of things, right? But then women have other priorities, right? They want a man who's successful, they want a man who can provide, they want a man who's strong, who's capable, right? And these are the things that a lot of men, like they struggle to live up to nowadays, because there again, there's this concept that masculinity is bad, that men and women are the same. And it's not, again, like it's not to say all men and all women are like this, but I think from my own personal experiences and from seeing the way that the world works and the dynamics that exist within the world, I do think that there is a role that exists, you know, for men and women to have healthy relationships and to create like families together.
Before you go too much further, let's there's a lot of stuff you're putting out here, so let's reflect on a couple of different things. So first off, the way you're talking about parents that are controlling, that was my dynamic growing up, you know. So that's how I felt. I felt like there was a controlling environment. So exactly what you said, I rebelled against everything and sought my own path. So that's one of the reasons why, and this is great because as generations, each generation can learn from their parents and intend to do better, right? So you'll try to do better than your parents, which, I'm one of your parents. And then I try to do better than my parents. And then the idea is you keep getting better with each generation. That's the intention. It doesn't always work that way, but that's the intention. And so that's why I did things differently with you, because I saw exactly what you said. So I'm glad that you see that too, that way doesn't work. It just makes the child want to be curious about the thing that they're told that's off limits. So a much better way is to have open line communication, and if you think something's not healthy for your child, to be able to communicate and explain it. So that helps the child to learn how to think through things and use their mind to understand what's best for them and what's not best for them, instead of just being what would be the word, G? Like if you know something for yourself, it's way better than like, I'm just doing it because someone's forcing me to do it and I'm afraid of getting punished if I don't do it, right? That doesn't create an intelligent human being. So this is what creates an intelligent human being, to be able to talk about things, ask questions, discuss, and learn for yourself why this is a healthier way of doing it than this way. So
Yeah,
that's
because otherwise you become like codependent on that control. Because like every decision that you make in your life, it's like you have to go back to that parent figure to tell you, oh, well, actually you shouldn't do drugs, or actually you shouldn't do this. Because like those type of children who raise up in those controlling environments, they're never given the opportunity to actually like make their own decisions and create their own like concept of right and wrong.
Yeah.
So
So
yeah.
you have a lot of adults now that are like that with the government or the church or religion or some kind of corporate marketing agency. They're looking, or some kind of, even like Hollywood celebrities or TikTokers, they're looking for somebody to like tell them what to do and how it is, But it's great to be inspired by other people and to learn from other people. That's my work. But also, first and foremost, you have to know what's true inside yourself, and someone else can only reflect that back to you or amplify that back to you. Otherwise, you're lost. You're lost, and that's when people get manipulated. That's when people get in this kind of cult-like dynamics. And they do behavior that is that they get manipulated to do destructive things to themselves. And as you awaken on this path, you learn that you need to take responsibility for that. This is a really key, maybe the most essential component of the masculine journey. The journey of manhood is taking responsibility. And you have to learn to stop blaming other people for your problems. Stop playing the victim. And that's the pathway to an empowered man. That's the pathway to becoming an empowered masculine man. So that's one key. And then the other thing that you're saying about how so many of the fathers that they don't have that kind of dynamic with their children, with their sons. It occurs to me that so many men, the reason they don't have that relationship with their sons is because they don't have that relationship with themselves. They don't have an intimate relationship with themselves. They don't really know themselves. They never really ask these kind of questions. And they never really had the courage to look for the answers to these questions. And so first and foremost, you have to be have that kind of intimate relationship with yourself, and then that allows you to have an intimate relationship with your wife, with your son, with your daughter, with friends. So many men don't have any friends. That's another thing that's really lost. Like, they don't have any sense of community. So being able to connect, make space to connect within yourself and get to know yourself deeply, that allows you to create these intimate relationships with other people, with your family, with friends, with community, and so forth.
Yeah, I honestly, and I was just kind of thinking about this, but I think one thing that's interesting is like our society as a whole is kind of moving away from religion, right? And religion kind of kept these things in place. Like there was a community, you know, you'd go to church every Sunday, you'd have these friends, and that kept the community. And then there was this relationship between the father and the son that was kind of held by the religious structure. You know, the nuclear family was held by the structure. And now that we don't have that as much, it's a lot harder for people to keep those things. It's a lot harder for young men to like, there's nothing holding in place, you know, okay, there has to be a father figure and there has to be a family and all this stuff. You know, it's like, you know, do what you want, you know, that type of thing. And I think it's a lot harder for people to like realize like what's valuable, right? Because there's a lot of like younger men and they get pulled into this world. And a lot of men, you know, especially men that I know, but in general, there's a lot of younger men who not only do they not have that type of relationship with their father, but also they don't have fathers at all. You know, they don't have like their father was an alcoholic, he was abusive, or he was never around, whatever the case is. I think there's a lot more younger men who have a difficult relationship with their father than one of their mother. And I think that more than anything contributes to a lot of problems because your father is like your biggest example in your life, right? It's not to say that like, you know, you can't become a good man with only a single mother. I mean, there's definitely men who have done that, but it is to say that like the chances of you being successful, like they've done statistics on this, but like daughter or son, you know, the chances of you being successful without a father and having healthy relationships is a lot lower, right? And the more of a toxic relationship you had of your father, the more difficult it is for you to form those relationships. And I've noticed that in my own life from women that I've dated, from various things that I've done, like people who have those type of toxic and like, you know, especially as you said, like, because I think the most important thing, it's not like obviously the father being an example and the father like guiding you in right and wrong is like important as well, right? But I would say even more important than that is just communication and just being around. Like if you're never around, if you're never there, if you're never in your child's life, like I've seen so many people be destroyed from that. Like seriously be negatively affected by the fact that their father was like, you know, not around, or like didn't show that they love them, like never told them they love them, that type of thing. It's so damaging. It's really damaging, and it does a lot of it causes a lot of mental turmoil for these people, and it makes it hard for them to, you know, create those relationships with other people because, like, our relationships, you know, and this is just a psychological thing, right? This is just an understanding psychology, but the type of dynamic that we have with our parents is what creates the type of dynamics we have with other people in our lives, whether that's intimate relationships, whether that's friendships, whatever the case is, you know, that kind of formulates those other type of relationships we have, right? And so when you have these difficult relationships with your father, you know, they call that a father wound, right? Like that's like a true psychological term, like having a father wound, right? And a lot of these people have father wounds. And that it negatively affects their intimate relationships, negatively affects relationships they have. Like, for example, like a woman who has a relationship with her man, if she didn't have a good relationship with her father, or if she only, you know, always saw like her mother in toxic relationships, she probably will have a hard time formulating a healthy relationship with a man, right? Because those ideas that she has around masculinity, the ideas that she has around men is negatively affected and it's jaded, right? Versus if you have a woman who has like a really like she saw her parents in a really healthy relationship. She had like a really close bond with her father. Her father was a good example to her. Like that's gonna allow her to have a lot more of a better view of men. Like she's gonna not only is she gonna feel comfortable around men, and she's gonna feel comfortable around masculinity, but also it's gonna allow her to develop those healthier relationships with men as well. And obviously for men, it's also really important because who you become as a man and like whether you can trust men, whether you are comfortable in your masculinity, that also depends on like your relationship with your father. So yeah, there's a lot of unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are negatively affected in our society by those relationships, but you know, it's something that's really important that not enough people are talking about.
Yeah, so that trauma is being carried, you know, that trauma. So many women have trauma with men. So many men have trauma with men. So, you know, a lot of the issues that we see right now of the lack of men, the lack of conscious masculinity in different dynamics is because people, unfortunately, don't want men. In leadership, like they don't trust that leadership because of trauma they have from the past, and yet they long for it, which is why they're so angry. That's why the anger is there, because on some deeper level they do want that and they long for it, and it's missing, and then men aren't showing up the way they want them to show up. So there's this kind of resentment, this anger, this kind of trauma, this wound that, as you called it, that's present. The other thing you said that's interesting is about religion, how people are leaving religion. And I'm curious about that. You know, we've had some conversations about that because that has been true, but I'm kind of tracking things, you know, people that I'm in conversations with, things I'm noticing, things online, things in within me personally, just so things in the collective. And I am noticing that something is happening. I don't know if I would say people are going to religion necessarily. Some people certainly are, but there's definitely like a sense that there was a mistake that was made. And this kind of atheistic, materialistic, everything's random, nothing matters. You know, just try to make your own meaning. This kind of nihilistic worldview is there's a sense that that's not working, that it's creating greater levels of depression, of suicide, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, all kinds of different chemical dependencies. And so there is some kind of a sense of that for sure, that like this direction hasn't worked, and a sense of everyone, but men in particular, we're talking about men are looking for some kind of higher spiritual connection to make sense of the world, to give them meaning and direction, to guide them. This is why someone like Jordan Peterson has become very popular in the past few years, and you know, kind of his circle of other different influencers and lecturers, there's a whole group of guys that they're resonating with people because people are looking for something. So I think my highest passion right now, this is something we could talk about in future podcasts, I think it's the biggest question of our time, is how do you integrate Christianity, religion in general, with science? How do you bring those two things together? I believe there is a way, and I believe they actually do go together. But they've been seen as separate. You know, when you go to the university like you have, I don't even think religion is generally discussed because it's seen as not scientific. It's kind of seen as anti-science. But I think there's, in truth, it's not anti-science, and science is not anti-spirituality or religion. However, religion has created dogmatic ideologies and things that have separated people from science. And science has its own dogma. This is the thing people don't realize. I call it scientism. So science, the kind of the whole woke thing, it's become like its own religion. And they have their own dogmas and their own things that have nothing to do with reality. In fact, they're becoming more and more divorced from reality, right?
Yeah.
So in the essence, science is the quest for truth. right? So science is the quest for truth in the material world. Spirituality or religion in its essence is the quest for truth, metaphysically, right? Beyond, within the physical realm and beyond the physical realm. So the next level for us as in our consciousness, as human consciousness, is for those two things to go together and to line up. And once those two things then line up, then okay, we understand and we perceive and we are aligned with the truth on the material world and the spiritual world, and it goes together in full alignment and coherency. Then something really powerful can open up. I sent you a podcast that I think you appreciate some of the things in there. And John Vervaeke was talking about how we need a new religion, you know. And new religion doesn't mean we're getting rid of the old religion. It just means, to me, it just means the continuing evolution of religion that now it integrates with science as well.
Yeah, so the thing about religion that I think is very interesting is I think religion is so innately tied to who we are as human beings that it's almost impossible to divorce human beings and religion. And I think that's something that the modern day world does not understand because humans have like it's almost like music. Like music is something that's so interesting, right? That human beings have and like no other animals have this concept of music, of like dancing, and like back, thousands of years ago, people would like dance around the tribes, and they would have these ways of communicating. You can say that's the origins of the first music, right? And I think religion is the same way. It's something that's like so innately tied to us, right? Because first of all, humans have we need a sense of meaning, we need a sense of purpose. That's something that's so important to us. And religion kind of fills that void, right? And then we need a sense of community, and religion fills that void. We need a sense of morality. We need a sense of what's right and wrong. Religion fills that void, right? And then there's also the other aspect too, where it's like we have these desires, we have these natural drives, whether it's a drive to procreate, a drive to have, sexual relations, whether it's a drive to accumulate material possessions, whatever the case is. We have these like natural urges, right? That Christianity would label as like the sins or whatever, or these evil desires. But despite the fact that there is this like dogmatic way of looking at it, there is something to be said about like how do we control these desires in a way that allows us to flourish and also other people. And I think at the heart of because I've studied Christianity a lot, and I think at the heart of Christianity, if you look at it from a very like logical perspective, the whole idea around Christianity is basically how do you live a life that's not only optimum for yourself, but also optimum for other people in the world, right? Because, Jesus talks about like treating other people as you would treat yourself, right? And turning the other cheek and these different things. And a lot of these things are not selfish. Like a lot of them are not about you. It's also about like the world, right? If you live in a community and you have like, various people living in the community and say like 30 people living in a community, the way for that community to flourish is for people to not be killing and attacking each other, right? It's not for them to be, manipulating each other, stealing things from each other, hurting each other, right? There has to be some level of, altruism, and there has to be some level of basically respecting each other, right? And I think what Christianity has done is, maybe humans have done this unconsciously, but they've found a system that was optimum for a very long time that allowed people to, channel their desires in a way that was productive to society and also control those desires in such a way that it actually led to the best for society, right? Because when you think of, controlling your lust, right? Back in the day, if you were to just sleep with like multiple women or whatever and get all these women pregnant, it wouldn't really work out. A lot of those women would, there's a lot of like unprotected sex that would happen. Like people would, the STDs would spread around, these children would never have a father, all these different things. Like nowadays we have more of a social network that I think allows, and I think this is one of the reasons why religion is kind of falling away somewhat is because people are a lot more comfortable and there isn't a need for these like rigid social rules because of the fact that like now there's more of a social net for if somebody makes a mistake, if somebody has a child out of wedlock or whatever, there is a social net that can help that child still be raised up, right? Despite the fact that it's probably not optimum, it's definitely not optimum for the child. Probably would be better for them to be raised in a family, but nonetheless, like that's still that child is still allowed to flourish regardless, right? If they have that social net. But back in the day, thousands of years ago, they didn't have that. So there was a need for these rigid rules. There was a need for dogma, as you would put it, right? For people to follow and to rigidly control their desires, right? Now,
Well, that's not dogma. Dogma would be like a story. So you're talking about kind of like rules, commandments, agreements. Even we could use that word as a softer word I've heard sometimes that I like. But dogma is like this is the story of like what happened, and you need to believe that the story is what happened, or I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to punish you in some way. So then somebody goes, okay, well, you're going to kill me. Okay, I'll believe the story, but I don't know if it's true, but I'll believe it because if I don't believe it, I'm going to get in like real trouble. Kind of like you say with the parenting thing, that's dogma. And then science comes and science goes, well, actually, based on the evidence and what we're observing, that's not what happened historically. The evidence shows us that this is the way it happened, right? And then they go, okay, now we're going to kill you. So there are many stories of scientists, people who are in the scientific world being killed because, for example, the Earth is round and it goes around goes around the sun, and oh, that
Yeah,
doesn't,
Galileo, he was
yeah.
killed.
So that doesn't align with the Christian, the religious dogma. So then we kill you. So that's that. But I actually think, why you're bringing this up, because my feeling is that Jesus, what Jesus was teaching was not actually to create a better world. It was actually to transcend the world. And but it's tricky because the paradox is when you do realize who you really are and you're able to fully transcend the world because you realize the truth of who you really are spiritually, you do make a better world. You show up in the world in a better way. So that is the byproduct of it. But people have kind of like reduced religion oftentimes to just this kind of like social construct of like, hey, do this stuff because, there won't be as much violence and things will be better organized. And it's like, well, there's much more there than that. There's something more powerful and potent to it than that. And that's what people are missing, who have totally, thrown out the baby with the bathwater on religion. Like I personally agree that I think this dogmatic stuff is counterproductive, is not helpful. Because if you're interested in the truth, then you're not interested in dogma. They just don't go together. So I think being interested in the truth is fundamental, as they said, it's fundamental in science, but also in religion. Jesus says over and over, the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free. He's interested in the truth, and he feels that he's realized the truth that he's wanting to share and communicate with the world, and that truth will set you free, will liberate you, not in some sense of like, not in an outward way, but in the deepest level of freedom, in an inner way. And to me, freedom and love actually at the deepest level are the same thing. So it will set you free, and it will also connect you. It will also envelop you in the deepest, purest, most powerful, miraculous love that there is, which Jesus called the love of God.
I mean, like I said, like I feel like religion, there is like a logical basis for it. And when you were saying like the new religion is to combine science and religion and to look at it without the dogma, I think that's kind of the way to do it. Because when you
Yes.
actually look at like the way religion was formulated and why it was formulated and why it worked the way it did for so long, basically, what it was it was a way for people to live in harmony with each other, and like, because as humans, like we have these desires, right? As humans, we have these desires that aren't always so helpful, whether to us, right? For example, like a lot of younger men, we talked about this in the last podcast, but a lot of younger men are addicted to pornography. Now, why are they addicted to pornography? We can list multiple reasons, but one thing that we know is that it's not good for them, right? And the reason why they are is because they have this
So explain why
inbuilt.
it's not, explain why it's not good for them.
Well, before I say that, one thing that's important is that they have this inbuilt sexual desire, right? So they have this inbuilt, like you can't control the fact that, you can't shut off this testosterone that's like, flowing through your veins, right? You have this desire to be with a woman, right? And then you go online, you see these images, right? And you're like, oh wow, your brain starts producing this dopamine and like it's firing off and like it becomes addictive because you're being exposed to all these images of women at once, right? And it's I would say that the reason why it's damaging, right, is because of the fact that it prevents you from creating real intimate relationships with real women, right? And there is a reason like why these religions have created boundaries around these things, because at some point the religion started to, like people started to realize, not just religions, but people in general, like looked around and they were like, oh, look, these pagan tribes, they're like sacrificing people, they're having these orgies, like it's just not working out, like these people are doing all this crazy stuff and it's just contributing to violence and selfishness and just like, hell on earth, right? And they're like, we have to find a way to create some sort of moral structure that will allow our society to not only have the best for ourselves, but also the best for p other people in the community. And that's when they started realizing, like, okay, if we write down these rules, that will kind of keep people in check so that, like, there's healthy relationships, we can still have, like, we can still channel our desires in a way that allows for our survival and our reproduction, but it's not in a way that's negatively affecting ourselves and other people, right? And the modern day world, unfortunately, like we don't have, like there's problems in the modern day world that still exist with these same things, right? We might not have like pagan tribes like sacrificing people, but we do have people who are, addicted to pornography. We do have people who are addicted to social media. We have people who are, in toxic relationships. We have a lot of problems in our society with greed, right? Greed and vanity and all these different things, right? And like a lot of these things you could call like the seven deadly sins, we still have problems with these things, right? It's just taken on a different fashion. It's just taken on a different way, right? And the problem is that people nowadays, they don't have a concept, like people who have moved away from religion, because religious people still have like, okay, I shouldn't watch pornography, or I shouldn't have, I shouldn't cheat on my wife or whatever, right? Because it's these objective laws that they're following, right? But people who aren't religious, they don't really have a guidance system that tells them like, don't do this, don't do that. So it's like the people who actually have formulated their own moral system that goes along with the modern day, whether that's like, okay, maybe I actually shouldn't spend 10 hours on my phone. Like maybe I should only spend 1 hour, or less than 1 hour. Maybe I shouldn't watch pornography. Maybe I should actually go out and talk to real women, form real intimate relationships. Maybe I shouldn't cheat on my wife and sleep around and get STDs or create the
Okay,
possibility of just
let's
toxic
pause. Let's pause a
relationships.
second. So, like, I think the key thing is that people are trying. Why are they doing all these things, right? Like, they're trying to find happiness. They're trying to find some sense of happiness, or probably more even accurately, they're trying to avoid suffering. And sometimes they're just trying to avoid suffering temporarily. So, if you kind of look at the kind of the bottom line of why people go to pornography, why they go to various types of drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, whatever other kind of vices that you want to bring up, fast food, desserts, sugar, all of these things are like, they're a way to feel good. People are trying to feel good. And so the religion, to me, it's the same thing we're talking about earlier. It's like some external thing trying to control you and tell you, like, oh, don't do this thing, even though that's the thing that's making you feel good. It's not going to work, and also with religion, the religions have gone, the stuff that they've done with sexuality, like telling people, like, not to have sex, sex is bad, Like you can only be a priest if you don't have sex, and you sexual desires are bad, thinking about sex is bad. This is like insane to me. This is literally like insanity. Like the human body is designed, it's the strongest desire is sexual procreation. So that's the most important, that's the strongest desire we have. So the right way to approach it would be like, and then there's the other side of things that you said of if you're just overcome by these desires and you're consumed by them, then you're creating all sorts of chaos and destruction, people getting raped and all this kind of stuff. That's not good either. So how do you channel this energy, which is there, it's not going to not be there. How do you channel this energy in a healthy, constructive way that creates a sense of well-being for yourself and others? That's really the question. And that's the question for all of these different things, right? So I think it's important to kind of state what the foundational question is. And then the second part is you need to find that truth for yourself. It's just the bottom line. Christianity might tell you something, Judaism might tell you something different, Islam might tell you something different, your secular people might tell you something different, psychology might tell you something. I actually think they all tell you the same thing, to be honest, but you have to go deep to realize that they're all telling you the same thing, and you have to recognize and realize it inside yourself, because you are a mirror for the universe. You are a mirror for the collective, and the collective is a mirror for you. So if you look inside yourself, you'll be able to discover that truth, and you'll see that all of these people, all these different cultures and places and time and religions and science and psychology and sociology, they're all actually pointing at the same truth. And that truth is available to you because that truth is the truth.
Yeah, but the thing of that is I think there's a problem that exists, and this is why people can't come to that truth in the modern day, and why so many people struggle with that is there actually is like a notion that it's okay to do these things. Like, for example, with pornography, there's people saying like, oh, it's okay to watch pornography 5 times a day. That's just your sexual drive. That's just the way, that's just what it is, right? And I think that the biggest reason why that happens is because there's a lot of people in the modern day, and we can dive more into this if you want to, because this is a kind of a bigger topic. But there's a lot of people in the modern day who want to make money. There's a lot of people in the modern day who want to use these desires that people have as a source of profit. And that's exactly what has happened, I think, around the 80s, the 70s, during the sexual revolution. What happened is that a big part of the sexual revolution, there was an aspect where it was like, okay, we want people to be free and to be able to explore their sexual desires, and to a degree, that's a good thing, right? But there was, I think, this more malevolent perspective, or this more malevolent aspect of it that wasn't with the majority of people, it was with a very small select people, but they saw this opportunity. They're like, okay, now that people are allowing their sexual desires to run free, now that it's not just, sex isn't just this regulated thing to marriage and just having children, why don't we take advantage of that? We can create things like pornography. We can profit off of, women selling their bodies, online or whatever, right? And the concept wasn't around how do we create a healthy, how do we use this sexual desire in a healthy way, and how do we create healthy relationships? It was around how do we make money, right? How do we make money off of these people's sexual desire? And when that market opened up, things like feminism, which was originally like a really good thing, right? It was about women getting voting rights and women, not being abused and objectified. It kind of like all these social, political movements that were going on in society were getting corrupted by this kind of capitalistic agenda, which was how do we profit off of these desires in a way. Like, to give you an example, like think of like something like McDonald's, right? McDonald's is like not healthy at all. It's very bad for you, and people will agree that it's bad for you. Like, people agree that McDonald's, maybe not to the degree of like cigarettes, but people will agree close to that amount that, like, McDonald's is not good, not healthy for you. If you eat McDonald's for like 3 months straight, you'll probably end up with a lot of health issues, right? But the thing is like, people still eat it, right? And McDonald's still markets it. And the reason why that is because McDonald's is getting profit, right? And there's this part of our brain that has these desires for like greasy, high carbohydrate food because, you know, somewhere back in our evolutionary past, right, that actually was rewarding. If we were starving for 3 weeks on end and we came across like some really sugar dense, like high carbohydrate fruit, that was actually really good for us and it rewarded us, right? But nowadays there's an overabundance of those things, and consuming those things at the level that we have now would actually be a detriment to our health, right? If we ate 10 candy bars a day, that actually, despite the fact that it tastes really good and we get this dopamine reward for it, it still is detriment to us. And that's exactly what's going on with these corporations, is they're taking advantage of the fact that we have these evolutionary drives. You know, we get these rewards from these things. If I go on social media and I get all these pings on my Instagram about, oh, you got 30 likes, or you got 10 new follows, like my brain is like boosting with dopamine because I'm getting these social rewards. But does that mean that I should spend 10 hours on Instagram? No, it's actually bad for me to do that, right? And that's why religion, in a sense, can't even keep up with all these new vices that are appearing in our world, because what has happened is that corporations have taken over, and corporations are using and manipulating society in such a way that they can profit. And a lot of people don't understand that there's a matrix. You know, a lot of people, you know, for example, like Andrew Tate, you know, Andrew Tate, you know, we could talk about that too, but Andrew Tate is this new, you know, role model for men. And in some ways you could say that's a bad thing. But, you know, basically, like, one of the things he talks about is this idea of the matrix, and you have to escape the matrix, right? And I think that one of the things that he says is true is that there's a matrix, right? And the matrix is kind of this capitalist consumerist matrix where it profits off of people's desires. It profits off of people being obese. It profits off of people being unhealthy, you know, relying on the medical pharmaceutical institutions, relying on pornography, you know,
All right,
escaping.
let me ask you a question. So it's the same question, right? That question of like, is this bringing the greatest sense of like health and well-being and fulfillment, right? So do you think these people that are behind these corporations, do you think that what they're doing is bringing that for them?
For the people who own the corporations?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, the thing is, it's kind of hard. I think the people who own these corporations have a lot of greed. And I think greed doesn't necessarily lead to health. Like, maybe there are people who own corporations who take care of their health and they have good families, but I think it's rare. I think a lot of times people are just solely focused on monetary gain. And that in itself won't lead to a healthy, happy life, right? I mean, you and me have talked about this a lot, but like, money in itself is not going to lead to the greatest life. There's a lot of people who are broke and poor, and they're extremely happy and healthy, right? And it's because they don't need a lot of money to have the life that they want. Like, they're, you know, we know, you and me both know that relationships, health, you know, doing what you find passionate, you know, living a passionate life, doing the things you enjoy, like, that's what's most important. It's not about having $3 million in the bank account. Now, having that amount of money would be nice, right? You can get a lot of nice things. You can afford to do a lot of cool stuff. But that in itself won't provide happiness. So, to answer your question, I think a lot of the people, no, I don't think they have that, because I think their focus is primarily on control, and it's primarily on monetary gain. And I think that in itself won't lead to living a healthy life.
Yeah, I just think that's a great question to always think about. Come back to that question of like, you know, is what I'm doing, is it working? You know, is it working for me? And what I see other people doing, is it working for them?
Yeah.
Just an important question to like always be mindful of. But I do like your I always liked your theory about capitalism. You'd
And
mentioned.
just to, like, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't I, what I'm saying is, like, I don't think capitalism, and I want to make this clear, I'm not like a communist, I'm not like some extreme leftist person that hates capitalism. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that capitalism, the way that's structured now, is the focus is on monetary gain. And like, when you only care about making money, producing products that actually helps the consumer and actually is the best for society is not something that you're caring about. Like that's the last thing you're thinking about. You're just thinking about, like at that point, it's like, what can people become addicted to, right? Like if people spend 10 hours on social media and that gets the most ad clicks, then let's just optimize people staying on social media for 20 hours a day because that is what makes us the most money. It's not like, how do we create social media that's like most beneficial and practical for society? It's how do we get the most money in our pocket? How do we get people to eat McDonald's? How do we make McDonald's as addictive as possible so people are always eating our cheeseburgers? Instead of how do we create a healthy, food that's good for everybody, right? So
Well,
that's the problem I have is like, go ahead.
here's a theory that I believe that you shared with me that I think is going to really blow people's minds. So the theory is that capitalism was actually the reason for the ending of slavery. Capitalism was actually the reason for the civil rights movement. Capitalism was the reason for feminism. Capitalism is the reason for trans, whatever it's called, trans rights. Capitalism is the reason for all these things. And it's so funny because the people that are in these movements, they have no, they don't, of course, they don't see it that way. They don't understand the way they don't realize that they're pawns in a bigger game. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I'm actually really happy you brought that up because that was something I actually forgot about it, but that is something that I think is really important to be talked about. But yeah, so the theory behind that, now this is to say, like I do think with all those movements, there is a degree of like people wanting, like, like obviously,
Initially.
yeah, obviously slavery is bad. Obviously, all these things are not good for society, right? But the thing is when people see a movement, it's easy to see a way for people to make money, right? And one of the things is we if we think about so going back to slavery and feminism, I'll use those first examples, right? So slavery, during slavery, the North was the people who had industrializations, like they were the first like true capitalists, right? Whereas the South was like relying on slaves to do manual labor and stuff like that, right? And so the North like saw the South and they're like, hey, these people have slaves and we actually have like factories that are producing, like, like they were starting the Industrial Revolution and they're like, we're competing with these people in the South, like this isn't going to work, like there's no way that we're going to make money with our industries if the South is still having slaves, right? So what happened is that they saw that and they saw like an opportunity, not for we're gonna abolish slavery because it's actually beneficial to African Americans and it's gonna lead to the well-being of these people, but rather it was a source of monetary gain, right? And same thing with feminism, right? Feminism was, during feminism, a lot of women were in the house. They were they were taking care of the kids. They weren't working, right? And these capitalists, they saw like, okay, wait, like there's half of the people in our society aren't working. So that means that like there's all this capital that we're just sitting on. And if we get put into the workplace, now we can make a shit ton more money, right? So that was another.
By the way, I just want to say that like more and more women are starting, I'm hearing more and more women are starting to realize that now. They got played basically. And that's interesting what's going to happen next because there's an awareness starting to come into being that this feminist movement, the way it's played out, really hasn't been to the benefit of women or men.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Well, I think it's very interesting, and also I think, like, again, like there was a good movement originally with feminism. I think that originally the objectives of feminism were good, but I think at some point it got kind of corrupted by capitalism. And I think capitalism, like, and this is the sad thing because it's sad that like people who believe in, like, because there's a lot of women who are usually like well-meaning and they're actually like want the best for humanity and they want women to have, like rights and make sure women have like the best life that they can possibly have, right? But then at the same time they're being played by a system that is actually against them. Like a lot of these liberal feminists, they want rights for women, But they also don't like capitalism. And unfortunately, like those things are in tandem with each other, right? Because capitalism has kind of taken the feminist movement and it said, basically, if there's more women in the workplace, if there's more women who are acting, because eventually, like, men were the ones who would go to work, men were the ones who were doing this type of stuff, right? And they saw, like, okay, well, if we make women act like men, then now there's more capital for us to make, for us to have capitalism functioning, right? And another thing is, even recently, because you also talked about LGBTQ and all these trans and all these things, that's another interesting thing too, because with that, obviously there's LGBTQ people, obviously there's people of color in our society and stuff like that, right? But what happened is now, like, companies have saw that there's these movements going on, and they're using it as opportunities to market to people. So
Better markets.
instead of, like, focusing on, like, how do we, like, make the best product or whatever, it's like, how do we have a broader market to how do we appeal to these movements so we can sell our product, right? And the interesting thing, to give you an example, is BMW. What they did is they had the LGBTQ, like, logo on their when they were marketing, and they had it in every country, every Western country, except the Middle Eastern countries. Middle Eastern countries, they didn't have the LGBTQ flag. And you can call it hypocritical, you can call it whatever you want, but that's exactly what they did, right? And that's why, like, people think that, like, oh, these companies, they're for LGBTQ, they're for diversity, they're for all these things. But you have to understand, they're doing that for money. They're
They're
doing
always they're always it's in the bylaws. They're always for maximizing profit, and they can never stop. They can never not be about maximizing profit. So if they have $1 trillion, they're still going to be about maximizing profit. It's in the bylaws. They're never about anything else besides maximizing profit. It's not within the bylaws. That's what needs to be followed at all times. Is the goal is to maximize profit. And there is no other objective besides to maximize profit. So everything else that you seems like it's some kind of like social justice, whatever. Sorry, it's about it's they're only doing that because it's some avenue to maximize profits. But I think that's a very astute realization by you, and I think yeah. I mean, if you look at the feminist movement, you look all these things have been to maximize profits. And if anything that kind of takes people off the hamster wheel of the matrix, that kind of gets people out of basically like the consumerist trap, the materialistic trap. Off the kind of train toward transhumanism, artificial intelligence, anything that any kind of counter movement to that, they don't like it. They don't like it because that means they're going to lose profits. They're going to lose their control over you, because if you need to work and use their products to survive, then they maximize profits. But if you don't need them, then they lose profits. So this then you start to understand the pharmaceutical industry, how that works, the military industrial complex, how that works. I would say those are the two industries that are the most essential ones to understand, because they're the ones that are really controlling so much of what we see in the news and so much of what is happening with governments and policies and so much of the way the world works right now is because of those two industries. And the narratives that they're running for why things are happening are not the real reasons why things are happening. The real reason things are happening is for them to maximize profits.
Well, that's the easiest way to manipulate people, because when you tell people that you're doing things for the good of all people, then people are going to buy into it, right? People are going to believe it. And the truth of the matter is that's not the case, right? Really, what it is it's for the profit of these 1% people, right? And it's not to, like, I don't want to put out a lot of fear. I don't want to, like, make people, like, obviously you can live a life where you're not affected by these things. And that's exactly what we're talking about, is, like, how do you live the optimal life? You have to understand, how do you create a moral system for yourself in which you're not letting these things manipulate you? The pornography, like this consumerist culture that basically is very unhealthy and leads to problems in almost every area of your life. There is a way to live in which you can live a natural life. And I would use that word natural because of the sense that a lot of what consumerism is creates an unnatural life, right? If you're watching pornography, you're seeing something with fake virtual women, right? If you're eating junk food, you're eating food that's not from the ground, that's not from the earth, that's not natural animals. You're not eating like fresh meat or whatever. You're eating this highly processed, junk food, right? If you're playing video games, you're chasing something that's in a virtual world versus achieving things in your own real life. So all these things are like a fake matrix that's created. And the reason why is because these corporations have realized like people have these natural urges, these natural needs. And if we can replace those natural needs of something man-made with something artificial, then now we have a source of profit. Now we have a way to, and I think, and this is the thing, we can get more into this, but I think that like it's going to get worse and worse to the point where people are going to be in such a virtual world, such a fake world that is accommodated to them because these corporations have, people are going to be putting on headsets, putting brains in their chips or chips in their
That's already
brain.
happening. Do you know about this thing I saw today? It just started. Apple put out something where you like put something on your face, and people are like walking around now with these things on their face, and they can't. They're going like this and like doing stuff.
The Apple, I think it's like the Apple Vision Pro or something like that.
Yeah, so that's it's already happening.
Yeah, and that's exactly because again, a lot of these corporations, like we have to understand, and this is something people don't like. For some reason, people can't wrap their mind around this, but like this right here, like this phone is owned by a corporation, right? And that corporation, their main goal, like as we talked about today, like you said, like
Maximize profit.
exactly, right? So
It's
the
not to help
goal.
you to communicate.
Yeah, so the goal, so listen, it's not to say that like phones are bad and like there are good things, there are good sides to these things, right? But what you have to understand is that their goal is to maximize profit. So it's going to meet some of the needs that you have, it's going to help some of the good needs that you have, but also there's going to be negative aspects to it. And you have to be aware of those negative aspects, and you have to be aware of the fact that like the way society is moving, it's heading in a direction where and I think this is going to be the way it is, but there's a divergence of humanity, right? There's people who are realizing that there is a way of living that is unnatural, that is caught in this consumerism, right? And then there's a way of living that's outside of this consumerism that actually is natural, to being human, right? But there's two directions, and one direction is, wearing like if you were to think of like the ultimate goal, right? It's like people like strapped up with like a VR headset and they're getting fed like I don't know if you've ever seen Wall-E, but they're like in these like chairs and they're all fat and they're floating around on these chairs with like junk food, like and then like these like junk food milkshakes, and they're just getting all this dopamine. Men will be in these like VR headsets where they're getting like virtual reality pornography where it's hyper realistic, and they'll have these hyper realistic like fake girlfriends, right? So we could think of all the directions this could go, but the main thing is that it's going to create a reality that is hyper addictive because it's something that will in a way be better than reality, be better than your current reality, but not really because it's fake, right? But in a way it will be this hyper like addictive like virtual reality that you'll be in, and it will be so like the urge, like the drive to want to be in that will be so strong that for a lot of people they're going to easily be caught in that, right? And they're going to easily want to replace their real life with that because it's like, real life is kind of hard and it's difficult. And that's the whole concept around the Matrix. If you ever seen the Matrix from 2001, like the original Matrix, that was the whole thing. Like it was like, do you want to take the blue pill or the red pill? Do you want to like escape reality and see it for what it is? Or do you want to see like how this system is that puts people in? And actually in the Matrix, that was exactly, it wasn't money, but the concept was there was like this AI that was draining the energy of people while keeping them in this virtual matrix, and the AI was basically, the technology had taken over and it was draining the life source out of people, right? To for this AI to function, right? And I don't know if that's exactly how the future could go many different ways, but I think one thing to keep in mind is that these corporations have a monopoly over society. And unless you realize the way that society is headed, unless you realize what these corporations' goals are, it's easy to get caught into that matrix. It's easy to get caught into that system because there's a lot of, it's understandable why people want to leave the world because, there's so many people are in jobs that they hate. People are in toxic relationships. People feel like there's no hope, there's no meaning to life. And I think a lot of that is created through this capitalist consumerist matrix. Because if you're working a job for a corporation, a lot of times it can be unmeaningful. It can be something you're not passionate about. If you're, a lot of toxic relationships are created via, a lot of the monopoly on sexual relationships, pornography, a lot of these social media, actually, even the social media have found a way to prioritize off of toxic relationships. And what I mean by that is men viewing women on social media, and women getting validation from men on social media, which doesn't create a healthy dynamic, right? So in a lot of ways, corporations are creating like unhealthy dynamics and really making people unhappy because of the fact that they care primarily about profit, right? So
Yeah, I wouldn't even say primarily about profit. That's all they care about is profit. Again, if that's what people need to understand about that. And then the reason that's important, it's not about being some kind of like negative energy or some kind of like being pessimistic about the world at all. It's really empowering because the more you understand the way the world works and the world operates and the way you can clearly see the things that you're observing, how they're happening, the conditioning, the programming around them, what the real intentions are, then it liberates you. It liberates you to, as you say, to like escape, to step out of the matrix. And the way to step out of the matrix is by realizing what it is and how it works. And then when you can really see clearly, you can create alliances with people that both of you both have your best shared interests in mind. And so that's the world that we're moving towards creating. The more we understand the way this thing is working, then we say, okay, we don't want to be a part of that. We want to be a part of, for example, we just got milk from a local farmer that we made friends with that's like, a few miles away. So that's forming an alliance with someone that I'm supporting them financially. They're supporting me with local milk that's really high quality, that's the cows are really well tended to and the highest level and cared for, and that's taking us out of multinational corporate agriculture and all the destructive foods and things that they create that are for maximizing profit. They're not for quality of food. They're not for the health of the human being that's taking in the food. So you can kind of look at all the different aspects of your life and look at like, how can I create alliances that recreate this dynamic of taking care of each other's best interests and forming those genuine relationships with the people that I'm in cooperation with. So that's one thing. And then there was something else you said too that I wanted to reflect on, but it hasn't come back to me yet. You had some other topics you wanted to, anything else on your list that you wanted to bring up?
Well, before we go to anything else, I just want to mention on that one point you said. So I do think it's creating alliances, but I also think it's having, and we were talking about this earlier with religion and like how do you create a moral system or like a belief system that's based in science. I think that when you start to see the way that these corporations work and consumerism works, you can create a morality around that, right? And that's just as important, if not more important than the alliances part, right? Because if you can understand like all these corporations that are trying to control and manipulate you, and it's not for your best interest, then you know what type of moral structure you need to create in your life. Like, okay, I shouldn't be watching pornography because I know that these corporations are trying to take advantage of me in that aspect, and it's addictive. And regardless of what I see, and this is the other thing too, right? Because I think you mentioned this, like a lot of narratives, even scientific narratives, are manipulated by corporations
Oh,
because,
yeah.
you know, all these pharmaceutical industries, like to give you an example, like the opioid crisis in America is huge. There are so many people that are addicted to opioids and oxycodone and all these different drugs, and it's such a problem that even like, you know, even like the mainstream media has like said stuff about it, right? But regardless, people still push these drugs. People still push all these pharmaceutical drugs on people. And the only reason why is because of the fact that there's money going in people's pockets, right? And they can back it with all the science, and they can say this is the best type of drug. And again, this isn't just with like painkillers, it's with a lot of different things, right? It's easy to say like you should take these drugs instead of saying, why don't you be healthy? Why don't you go to the gym? Why don't you eat healthy foods? Why don't you get enough quality sleep? Why don't you have healthy relationships that lower your stress and your cortisol, right? Like they're not going to tell you those things because that prevents them from you relying on them. So when you start to come to these conclusions about how these corporations are taking advantage of you, they want you to be addicted to their drugs. They want you to not have the most optimum life. Instead, they want you to be relying on them. Then you can create a moral structure and say, okay, I shouldn't be eating fast food. I shouldn't be watching pornography. I shouldn't be playing video games or being on social media 10 hours a day, right? And you start to create a structure that actually allows you to live the most optimum life. Because in my personal opinion, right, and a lot of times I see this, is like life is a video game, right? Life, like, people are so caught up in like the, you know, playing video games online, and especially for my generation, maybe not as much for yours, but for my generation, people are hyper addicted to video games, right? And that's something that I removed at a younger age that I was happy to do because I'm not addicted to video games. Like there was a few times where I got into it, but I've never really had a problem with video games in my life, right? And that's something I'm very grateful for, right? But there's a lot of younger kids, and there's a lot of people growing up in my generation where they have an addiction to video games, and all the goals, like if you look at a video game, the goal in the video game is like you have to achieve a certain thing, and you have like a amount of you have to have you have a certain amount of levels in which you can achieve that thing. And if you don't achieve that thing, then it's game over, right? And life is in the same way, the way a video game is, right? Because it says the goal is to have the most optimum life. The goal is to have a happy, fulfilling life, right? And there's all these obstacles in the way that prevent you from achieving that thing, right? But you can level up, you can learn the game. You know, if you're playing Mario, you learn, okay, I have to jump here. I have to make sure I jump over this mushroom, or I have to make sure that I don't fall in this pit or whatever, right? And you learn the game each time you replay the level, you learn it, right? And you learn what not to do and what to do, right? And if you learn anything, you know, about the game we live in now, the video game that we live in now, there are like a lot of obstacles in the way. And you have to create a structure, a moral system that allows you to flourish and allows you to get rid of these vices that, you know, these corporations are kind of trying to put out in the world, right? You know, and a lot of things are, you know, there's a lot of things in the world too that don't directly seem like they're tied to corporations, don't directly seem like they're, you know, in cahoots with corporations, like, you know, as we talked about various like political ideologies or movements, or even just the way relationships are. I've seen so many toxic relationships in modern society, especially in my generation. And I think a large part of it is because of social media, is because of, you know, a lot of the belief systems that are in like the very toxic feminist ideologies, and kind of the abolition of like the getting rid of the nuclear family, those different types of things. I think a lot of those things are a result of capitalism trying to monetize, right? And if you have more people on dating apps, that's more money in their pocket, right? So they don't care about you having an actual fulfilling relationship. They want you to be lonely and single and desperate on a dating app because that's more money in their pocket. That means you're going to buy Tinder Gold or whatever, and you're going to be swiping through people. And that's more money in their pocket, right? They don't want you to have a health relationship. They don't want you to have a marriage that's fulfilling, because if you're not in a marriage, if you're not a fulfilling relationship, then you're going to be on pornography, then you're going to be on OnlyFans, then you're going to be on dating apps, and that's money in the pockets of a lot of people. And we can see why the marketing and the social manipulation that's putting people onto these things, the damage that it's doing to our society. It's doing so much damage to relationships. And I don't think people realize like where that stems from, right? I don't think people realize the damage that it's doing to our society. And if people truly understood the root of these things, then they could create
Well,
a life
I
that
think
actually prevents them
another
from.
component that's really important about this, how to break out of this that we haven't talked about yet, is self-love and self-worth. And the way that these corporations generally hook you, if you watch, any commercial, which that's how they get you, is through advertising, commercials, marketing. The first thing is usually they want you to think there's something wrong with you. Either something's wrong with you or something could be wrong with you. So if it's the pharmaceutical industry, it's like, oh, you what if you get sick and you can't be there for your family, and what if you die, and what if your someone you love dies, and we have this, take this medicine, and then you'll never have to worry about that again, so
Yeah,
you're like,
they
well,
always have those like super happy people in the commercial, like
But the thing is, it's like, well, I wasn't worried about it to begin with. You're the one that started talking to me about it. I was just watching a show, and now you're talking about all these terrible things that could happen to me, right? So there's that. And then there's like, kind of like, if let's look at another example, would be like kind of the beauty industry. Basically, in a very polite way, they're like, you're ugly, you're fat, you're not, you don't, you're getting old. Oh, we have the solution for you, take our product, So if you have a healthy sense of self-love and self-worth, which I would say can only really come from a spiritual connection. If you have that spiritual connection that gives you a healthy sense of self-love and self-worth as you are, then you're not susceptible to these corporations getting their hooks, getting their claws into you. And so that's the liberation, that's the freedom. Jesus said, the truth will set you free. So you're free from their tricks and their manipulations. You're very hard to manipulate if you have a healthy sense of self-love and self-worth. The other thing I just want to point out, in case it hasn't been made clear, is that for anybody who thinks like, oh, okay, corporations are bad, so government is the solution. Corporations control the government. That's where we're at in 2024. So they're one and the same thing. Just wanted to make that point clear.
Now that's a very important point because and this is a thing. The reason why I think that the political structure is the way it is because it's easy to manipulate people with the bipartisan system. I think that like, and people, this is more of a controversial point, but I generally think that the way our political structure is made is to keep people from seeing that both sides are working together, right? Because you have the conservatives that are, very adamant about family values and very adamant about like traditional values, but also adamant about like capitalism, right? And then you have the liberals who are like, we want everything to be free and like everything to be open and rights for all these different people, but also we're like anti-capitalist, right? And they don't realize that like these things go together. Like capitalism is promoting these anti-family, anti-traditional values, and it's also promoting like the acceptance of all these things because that puts more money in their pocket. Now, it's not to say like the acceptance of these things are bad. I think a certain degree of it, depending on what it is, can be bad. Obviously, like things like certain things are bad for our society.
Like pedophilia.
I mean, that's a good example. But obviously, right, like there's these things are not just to be good, like the LGBTQ movement or the trans movement or whatever. It like a lot of these things are being corrupted, and it's not like a thing of like we care about gay people. It's like a thing of like how do we market our beer,
Black Lives Matter is another example.
and like all these corporations, the moment that during that month or during 2020, all these corporations just caught on. They're like, oh,
Yeah,
Black
we
Lives
can make
Matter
money off of
t-shirts.
this. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's
Yeah.
like, I think people like genuinely they're so caught in the matrix that they can't see outside of it. And they think that like the belief systems that they have, they chose those, they're actually supporting something good. But then when they actually like when you actually look outside of what's going on, it's like, actually, dude, you were being kind of manipulated there. Like you actually were kind of being used. And I think it's hard for people to realize that because they want to have that sense of like autonomy, that they're doing something good for the world and that they're believing in something that they chose to believe in. But a lot of times these people, unfortunately, are just being used and manipulated. And it's a really hard thing to come to. It's a really hard conclusion to come to when you come out of it. But then you start to realize like, okay, I need to start like thinking about things for myself. And I need to really start like introspecting on like what can I do for myself and for humanity that actually is best and not just in alignment with what these corporations are promoting. You know, because again, like the reason why these corporations control the government is because, you know, resources, like there's this one quote that I think is really important. And it's like, to understand history, you have to look at it as you know, a fight over resources, or as like who controls the resources, right? That's really what history is. It's like a fight over resources. And it's still the way our society is. It's still like the way our society is functioning. And when you start to look at society in that way, you start to realize that government is not really functioning in such a way where it's like obviously there's a certain degree of like, you know, you want humanity, you want society to function as a system, but that system in a lot of ways is just to monetize profit. And a lot of what like these politicians are supporting is because, you know, these corporations are paying them. Like there's actually a thing called PAC groups, right? PACs that pay politicians to support their, you know, their corporation, right? In their election or like when they're elected. And really what we kind of live in is it's kind of I don't know if the correct, is it autocracy or something, or I don't know the correct term, but
I can't remember it either, but
yeah,
yeah,
like autocr I don't know, but
the opposite of democracy.
yeah, it's not a democracy. It's something where it's like, you know, you want basically like money is what controls a lot of who gets elected, a lot of these different things, and a lot of the ideologies that exist in our society are promoted, you know, through social, like via social engineering to get people to consume, right? So that's something I think people need to be aware of.
Let's start to wrap it up, G. This has been great. Any last question or last words or any takeaways you want to share before we close out?
Well, I think one thing that we haven't talked about is like young men. I think we talked about this before, but you know, there's a lot of things going on with young men.
Yeah, we're gonna have to come back for that one. Go deeper into that.
But I think that's one thing that we should dwell into. You know, like there's a lot of things with young men, especially, you know, there's that article that came out, I think, last year. And it was like young men are lonelier and single than ever before, and sexless than ever before. And that's something that I think is interesting to look at and look at the reasons for that, but also
Yeah.
the
Well, I
solutions.
think we did touch on a lot of the reasons for it, you know, so people kind of circle back to the things we've been discussing. Those are all the reasons for it. And I really think that the core answer to so much of this, because I know it can seem overwhelming, it's all these forces are so big and how are we going to fight them? How are we going to take them out? You know, you don't have to fight them, you have to take them out. Just self-love and self-worth, self-love and self-worth. And the more those things become stronger inside yourself, the more, like, just vibrationally, you don't resonate with any of this stuff anymore. And the way to that, the way to that is, it's spiritually. Spiritually is the answer. Your realization of who you really are, like, who, you know, the two essential questions in life: who am I and why am I here? You start to really get a sense of who you really are on a spiritual, in a spiritual level, transcending that which comes and goes in the material world of form. And why am I here? You know, what is my purpose? Then you start living in a way and you start kind of like vibrating in a way, and your energy, everything about you doesn't connect to that frequency anymore. You know, you've kind of transcended it. So that's the good news for people listening and for young men listening, is there is a way to transcend it. And just to understand that and realize that and to dedicate yourself to that, you will find that way. And these obstacles, like you said, I like your analogy of the video game. I use that a lot myself. These obstacles, they're there actually to kind of make you more stronger and resilient to in your dedication, in your resolve to realizing who you really are, to your discovery of who you really are and to why you're here.
Yeah, and I think one thing that correlates also with, like, obviously self-worth is a big thing because, a lot of corporations, like, they make you feel like, oh, you don't have enough, or especially, with younger women as well. Like, there's a lot of body dysmorphia. There's a lot of w younger women who, like, compare themselves on social media and all this, and then they buy into all these beauty products, and they buy into, like, these like leggings that make your body look a certain way, or these different clothing that like make you look better, which I think is a problem, right? I think that that's really harmful to women, but also in general, like, besides self-worth, another thing that's really important is just being healthy. I think understanding what's healthy, and not healthy on a level of just what you eat and taking care of your body, but also like healthy relationships, like understanding, like, how do I, like, because so many people in my generation, I think this is the reason why so many younger men are single, and so many younger men are, they either end up in toxic relationships, or they go to pornography, right? I think what happens is there's a lot of toxic relationships, and especially in my generation and younger generations. And I think, again, that's created through the capitalism, the social engineering. But also, I think when people understand how to have healthy relationships, they understand how to take care of their body, they understand how to take care of their mind, how they understand how to live a spiritually connected life, then that all these other things, all these external things that are trying to manipulate them, trying to control them, trying to use them, will have no effect, because you're grounded in something that is true and is optimum for living the best life, right? The moment you start eating the right foods, you start taking care of your body, you start having relationships in which there's good communication, there's honesty, there's love, there's trust, there's care. Then these external things don't have an influence on you. And then the spiritual thing is what grounds you in that. The spiritual thing is what makes you understand, like, this is optimum, this is the way I should live. And all these other things don't matter, because I'm here for a deeper purpose. And that purpose is not only to live the best optimal life for myself, but also to serve others in some way. And when you live that type of lifestyle, these things in the world, because there's this quote in the Bible, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's like, don't focus on the ways of the world. Focus on the things above, focus on heavenly things, right? And I think that's a really important quote, right? Because a lot of people get caught up in, like, I just want to make a lot of money, I just want to have, I want to look beautiful, I want to, a lot of these, like, superficial things, right? And they lose track of what's really important, because what's really important is staying grounded, staying healthy, having healthy relationships, having, I think that's what makes people happy. And when people die, I was watching this video the other day about people's biggest regrets when they die, and some of the biggest regrets were, I wish I worked a job that I liked. I wish I had time to do things I was passionate about. I wish I spent more time with my family. I wish I actually was more courageous, and I cared less about people, what people think, right? And all these things are things that people lose track of, because they're so focused on caring about fitting in with society, caring about making their parents happy, caring about, following this dogma, or making money, whatever the case is. They lose track of what's really important, right? And the more people can gain perspective and understand what's healthy, what's optimum to live the best possible life and to be happy, not success, not like the way society makes happy seem, right? Because that's not truly what happiness is. What's truly happy for yourself? That's truly happy for doing the things you're passionate about, living the life that you have an abundance, and you're doing the things you enjoy, and you're living a fulfilling life, having fulfilling relationships. That is the happiness that I'm talking about. That is the type of healthy lifestyle that I'm talking about. When you truly understand how to live that, then these other things don't have an effect on you.
Beautiful. Love you, son. Proud of you. Thanks for being here with me.
Love you too, Dad. And as again, another great
Another great
podcast.
one. We'll keep it going. So, those of you listening, thanks for being here. If you have reflections on anything that we've shared, feel free to let us know in the comments. And see you next time.